You're listening to the Tennis.com podcast. And here's your host, Ed McGrogan.
Want to welcome everyone back to the latest Tennis.com Press Room podcast here. Back with Pete Botta, who's in Paris for the French Open. I'm Ed McGrogan. Pete, wanted to catch up after a few, I think, pretty noteworthy days at Roland Garros. You know, coming into this tournament, I think we saw sort of the top-heavy nature of some of the draws, where we're seeing a couple, like a day like today on this Monday, not as packed of a slate, and we're, you know, getting the opposite of that on the couple of the previous days. We're really seeing one big happening after another. You know, kind of where do you want to start? There's a lot to talk about.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think maybe the Jonas Golubic upset of Roger Federer was just one of the many landmark matches. But, you know, they've been, you know, really pretty much from day one, it's been like this. I mean, Serena, she won her first match, but, you know, Muguruza kind of began and kicked off the trend in a sense, and then it went from there. I mean, actually,
and don't forget, Stan and Lina, all this stuff. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, forgive me. It was actually Guillermo Garcia Lopez who kicked off this this trend, I guess, and it's been sustained. So it's actually been a very, very good tournament.
Yeah, you know, for Golubic and Roger, like you said, I think the most surprising thing may have been really the headstrong nature of Golubic in the fifth there. I mean, it wasn't a fifth set where it kind of traded really breaks and, you know, kind of the last one standing. It was, you know, he gets an early break and really rides that to the end.
Absolutely. And I think, look, I mean, some people will dissent. You know, Roger doesn't really like this idea, but look, the thing is, he's a fading champion. There's no question about that in my mind. It's not a criticism. It's just a reality of life. And if he wouldn't be fading today, he'll be fading in a year. I mean, the thing is, matches like this, look, I mean, I think this is the kind of match where Roger Federer, in a different couple of years ago, comes back and wins this in five. But, you know, and all props to Golubic, he dictated. He, you know, shut Federer out, and he had an excellent game plan, working that Federer backhand, then going down the line with his own backhand, which he himself described as one of the best backhands on a tour, and I think that's an accurate description.
How about Maria Sharapova on this day that really is the one that avoids that, you know, this kind of string of events happening, and for a while, certainly looking to be the latest top, you know, women's seed on her way up, but then just, you know, 180 degrees on Stozer.
Well, you know, it's funny. Once you saw this trend developing of former champions losing, immediately her name jumps out at the draw saying, you know, Sharapova could lose. How often has she come out here and been a little bit flat, hasn't been able to find her game? She's really, in a way, a very extraordinary player these days, because there are a few players who are, you know, so prone to having really bad patches when she can't get the ball in play, and then yet somehow having so much willpower and determination that she pulls her game together and goes on to win. Anyway, look, looked for a while like she was a very, very likely candidate for this. But the flip side of that, of course, is that it's also incentive, it's motivation. You know, the tournament is really hers to lose if you look at the record of the people who are in there. But she's got a pretty tough road ahead of her. I mean, I think there are some, Simona Halep is playing some very good tennis. Eugenie Bouchard is a very crafty, clever player. It's, you know, it's certainly not going to be a cakewalk for her.
Yeah, and she gets Muguruza next, actually. And that's right. Gonna, in and of itself, is going to be a difficult one.
Absolutely.
And someone else who survives that you know, that early trial, you know, certainly not the clay court champion that we always have in mind, but yeah, Andy Murray getting through 12-10 after coming back from sleeping on 7-7 against Cole Schreiber, you know, really pretty impressive stuff from a player who most people probably have already thought of, you know, in his Wimbledon terminology at this point. And you know, he's into the quarters, I believe, now.
Yes, I think something kicked into Mr. Murray's head and said, hey, wait a second, you know, times are wasting here. Wimbledon's coming up. I definitely do not want to go into the clay court, into the grass court season appearing to really, really be in trouble. And so I think that really was excellent motivation for Murray. By the way, Murray's in the quarters. I'm sorry, the
fourth
round. That was a He's in the fourth round now to play Fernando Verdasco, which is going to be a tough match. Both of those men had to finish their matches yesterday. But, you know, Verdasco is a very competent clay court player. I think, you know, the thing with Murray is he can be very up and down. He's very lucky to get that match postponed at that point because it had been Cole Schreiber had a second win. On the other hand, Cole Schreiber is a very, very good player. He's extremely versatile. He's got every trick in the book. You know, his serve, you know, is a liability a little bit because it's returnable. But Murray did a very good job coming back to hold on, and he's getting the matches he needs.
Someone who's playing later today, but when you hear this, we'll see where their match is. If it's either already been completed, who knows? But Monfils, who did the sequel to him and Fanini this year at the French. You remember, I think it was in 2012 where they played pretty much into the late evening, and the kind of drama sort of returned for this rematch in different ways. Neither player, I think, a stranger to the controversies of play, and so what's the latest on Gaël you're hearing over there?
Well, he's such a melodramatic, he's such a showman, and that really goes two ways. I mean, A, you could love him because he gets the crowd excited, and he's very dramatic, and he's very self-aggrandizing and stuff with his, carrying on and pounding his chest to show how big his heart is and stuff like that. You know, the other way to look at that, of course, is to criticize him and say, look, just shut up and play. That's, sometimes you just want that. It was interesting, his match with Fognini, in a fourth set, he essentially tanked that match. He said he was tired, pretty much tried to tank the match. The remarkable thing was Fognini didn't really want to let him. So instead of like hitting a couple of drop shots, making it easy for him, Fognini just kind of looped the ball back, made him run some more. It was just what it was weird. When you sat out there, you're wondering, is Monfils hurt? What's he doing? How come Fognini's not doing anything? And then, in the fifth set, of course, Monfils goes from dead man superstar. Personally, that kind of thing gets a little old for me. The fans loved it, of course, he being French. I don't know how that would have played in Rome, by the way. They would have run him out of town on a rail. But it's the one that I got to hand it to the guy, though. He has a way of generating excitement and energy and getting the crowd into it.
On the flip side, what about Tsonga and in comparison, Monfils kind of a dud almost in a performance wise, of course, against, he runs into a buzzsaw. You could certainly say that in Djokovic, but this match certainly wasn't even competitive. And then you think about back to last year in the semis after the Djokovic Nadal Classic. I mean, he's kind of put up some pretty startlingly puzzling.
Ugly is the word you're looking for.
Ugly, flat, kind of you name it. So, I mean, that to me was actually one of the biggest surprises of all of these really happenings, is just kind of the inability to really generate anything.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, especially when you consider that he's a guy who had, what did he have, 3 match points against Djokovic, maybe 4, years ago here on Suzanne Lenglen. So you kind of thought, well, okay, here's a chance. And, it's almost like it's 3-4 years now I've gone into the French Open. Coming to the French Open, I'm thinking first and foremost that, this could be the year that a Frenchman wins it. And, I think it's going to be Tsonga. Monfils just doesn't seem to have the sort of brain, to make that happen, whereas Tsonga does. Tsonga's less interested, as much of a showman as he is. He's less interested in the peripherals. He's less melodramatic. He's less, living 1 minute, dying the next. So I've had great hopes for him, and it's really been very disappointing because he's, he's got it all. Let's face it. Granted, clay's not his best surface, but he just needs to step his game up. Having said that, there's starting to be something almost, spooky about the way Djokovic is playing. It seems like things are really coming together for him.
Yeah, and looking ahead, not for Djokovic necessarily, but for the matches that we know in the quarterfinals, two Canadians in there, Bouchard, Raonic. Raonic will play Djokovic. Bouchard, we following up an Australian Open with really another just very deep run in a major here. To close things out, what have you seen and possibly heard about, where these two have gone? Because it's in both cases, the ascent seems to be continuing. I think Bouchard certainly, obviously quicker than Raonic, but Raonic has taken, I think, you know, sort of noticeable, undeniable steps and really has not slid back. You know, still waiting for that major, major victory, but he's going to get a shot against Djokovic, too.
Well, I'll let you know a little secret. This is sort of a secret of the trade, and you probably know it, but a lot of our listeners might not. That the reason I haven't seen a whole lot of Raonic and Bouchard here, of course, I've seen the scores, because every time I've looked up, they've been leading like 6-1, 4-1. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't need to go on and watch this. These guys are just, you know, kicking butt and taking names. So, you know, that's, you know, something to keep in mind. But, you know, look, the thing is, I think the work that Raonic has been doing with his new coaches led by Ivan Ljubicic is really paying off. And he knows exactly, he needs to make that transition from being a really nice guy with a big serve who just throws the ball in there and then plays a point to a guy who's really going to impose himself and dictate. He knows this. Ljubicic knows this. The world knows this. But I think he's starting to make that work. He's starting to. He's come to understand, I think, that he, you know, matches need to be played on his terms. And when he does that, he can be well nigh unbeatable when his serve's working. So that's what's going on with him.
Bouchard gets Suarez-Navarro in next match.
Right. I mean, Suarez-Navarro is clever. She's had a very good run here. She had, you know, she had a tough win yesterday. But, you know, I like Bouchard in that one. I like Bouchard's thinking is good. She's very level-headed, very cool-headed, and very solid in every department. It'd be funny if we ended up with Raonic and Bouchard as the French Open champions.
There you go. Yeah.
Nadal may have something to say about that, but
he might.
Or Djokovic.
Yeah, exactly. Good stuff. We'll see how week two turns out compared to, I think, a pretty busy week one. And you know, even though that all said, you know, you still look at the draws and, you know, so many of the big names are still there. So should be good stuff coming up, and we will hear more from you, Pete, in your time in Paris. Everyone else, thank you for listening. Come back. Tennis.com podcast.
You've been enjoying Tennis.com's weekly podcast. Thanks for listening. For all the latest news and events, head over to tennis.com.